Good morning, Larry Richard with Eggerman, Paul Rasmussen. Property tax increases, anytime you hear that, that has a very swift reaction by many people say, oh, don't do that. So in Allegheny County Executive Sarah Anna Murata, when she proposed the budget, had a 46.5% property tax in there to cover a $80 million shortfall projected for the next fiscal year.
But then last night, we heard from the county manager that if they don't get the increased tax revenue they're looking for, they're going to have to take $250 million from the budget.
Okay, how's that work?
I'm not quite sure. But it's apocalyptic, and he used the word catastrophic.
That is a word.
So now, on the one hand, they're saying that this is only $15 a month for the average taxpayer. But on the other hand, they're talking about these big numbers. You know, it's a little hard to make sense of it.
Well, and this is on top of Allegheny County Council pushing back on the tax in the first place.
Yeah, some of them say it should be half as much.
So that conversation will continue in an effort to try to figure out how to fill the shortfall. But $250 million seems like a stretch.
If you have a projected $81 million deficit to
originally
fill. I don't know. This could be, there could be very good reasons for that. I'm not entirely sure. But it did get my attention. The first thing that got my attention when I got into the office this morning was the fact that they had their third, I think it's the final budget hearing that the council has before they start to do their work, whatever that's going to be.
And Sarah Anna Murata at one point did say, okay, what's your plan? So we'll see.
And Pat Catena proposed, you know, before she said that even, proposed, you know, not increasing spending by 3% and making some budget cuts.
Budget cuts?
Wow. Spend less money.
All right, we'll see where that goes and we'll keep you posted. Meanwhile, the election drones on for another 5 days, take us into Tuesday, and the candidates continue to crisscross the region or their surrogates.
Yeah. Well, yesterday, Senator Chris Coons from Delaware was a guest with Michael Bartley, and he was campaigning for the Harris campaign. And then we had the Senate candidate, the challenger, the Republican, Dave McCormick, was in Warrendale with Nikki Haley. So they had a rally there, and I have now that Bob Casey is going to go out with John Fetterman today and have rallies, in Allegheny, Washington, and Westmoreland counties today. So the Senate campaign is really focused here.
Dave McCormick and Nikki Haley were at Jurgles, mm-hmm, right?
Right.
Up in Warrendale.
Yeah.
It's a performance site, a destination place for many, but usually to see musical acts.
Right.
And as we mentioned yesterday, they most recently opened Donnie Iris's King Cool Cigar Bar. Don't know if
right.
Dave and Nikki went in for a quick one, but
a stogie.
A stogie, which are called stogies. I learned this at the Heinz History Center because they used to be brought here, cigars, by Conestoga wagons.
Oh, okay. Now we know.
That's how you got the name, nickname, stogie. Which is,
I always wondered about that.
Some people use to refer to cigars, particularly those old big cigars. You know, like the picture of Art Rooney, the chief, would always have that cigar.
Oh, gosh, yeah. Now, there was an eruption yesterday of allegations about voter fraud and registration problems, and the county quickly responded. Even the state had a news conference yesterday talking about, you know, is this, can we count on it, you know, or is it, you know, but the questions have already started coming up about
right.
whether or not the results are going to be, you know, that we can trust the results and the allegations of fraud and so on. So,
well, all now, the polls suggest that statistical, you know, margins of error. Either way, it looks like a dead heat. So one side feels good, the other side feels good. We'll see what happens.
Sure.
And then
yeah.
whoever doesn't win will no doubt say somehow they were cheated.
Yeah, hopefully not. Man, hopefully it'll be enough of a margin of victory that it won't be a problem. But
meanwhile, baseball, Paul.
And I think that for fans of baseball in Pittsburgh, last night was a bitter pill to swallow for some of my friends on social media who were saying basically that the teams with the two biggest payrolls were competing for the world title again. It all came down to that.
Start the party, Los Angeles! Your Dodgers have won the World Series!
Start the party, L.A. Yeah, and
I mean, they've got one player on their team that's making $700 million.
Good God. And a former Pirate pitching, Gerrit Cole, last
night.
He
had a bad night last night.
Oh, well. And
the Yankees had a bad night last night. A five-run lead they blew.
They blew a five-run lead at home and ended up losing 7-6. The Dodgers win it 4-1, and that's their second time in, what, the last 8 years. And the Yankees now have not won a World Series in 15. For them, that's a long time.
Yeah, but they've been to the World Series their fair share, even better than their fair share.
Will the Pirates ever get a chance to go back to the World Series? That's a rhetorical question.
I think that's, you know, I think we all know the answer to that question right now.
Download the free Odyssey app, AUDACY. Take us with you wherever you go. We'll keep you posted on breaking news, weather, and high school football. We got our first playoff. Yeah, Penn Hills and Moon this Friday night. And the Sparred Out Financial pregame show starts at 6. And Friday Night Lights. The game of the week is powered by Bowser's Chevrolet. And Dan Zangrilli, Johnny Lee, and Donnie Football do a great job, Paul.
They sure do. Truly. So there is a really good article in the Post-Gazette today about the presidential race and the importance of the race in Pennsylvania in the big picture. And they have a graphic here that I'd like to just share a couple of quick observations with you. Most visited states since July 21st, Pennsylvania's first on the list with 63.
Wow.
63. That breaks down 16 for Harris, 14 for Waltz, 21 for Trump, and 12 for Vance. The next closest state is Michigan with 41. And if you go to the cities, the 10 most visited cities as of October 25th, Philadelphia's first on the list with 12, Pittsburgh has 9. Las Vegas is third with 8. So it gives you some idea of how 21 visits to the two big cities in Pennsylvania compared to the next biggest total is 8 in Las Vegas.
Yeah, curious Las Vegas of all places.
Well, that's Harris County. That's where the vast majority of Nevada's voters live.
I know, but I mean, so, of all the cities on earth, Las Vegas?
Well, they can go either way.
Yeah, but I mean, how many electoral college votes are there?
I'm not sure.
I just think Vegas, they wanted an excuse to go to Vegas and party.
Well, it could be. Yeah.
Meanwhile, this is Halloween, and for the first time in almost 100 years, speaking of cities, Iowa City will have trick-or-treating on this day. Since 1938, Paul, kids in Des Moines have been going out for candy on what they call Beggar's Night, which is the night before Halloween, also known as Devil's Night.
Right.
Back then, 1938, Iowa City officials were trying to crack down on vandalism during the holiday, officially calling it hooliganism due to the severe weather they're having out there. They moved trick-or-treating to the actual day of Halloween tonight.
That's interesting. I lived in Iowa City for a time.
Oh, did you?
Uh-huh. In 1980, Hayden Fry had just taken over the football program. They had just finished their new arena. But I don't recall that part of life in Iowa City.
Yeah, they didn't.
I'm sure it was on my radar at some point. I just forgot.
And there are some very religious people that don't buy into the Halloween thing because it's a pagan holiday.
Well, there are people in churches who have a celebration for the kids, and it's different, you know, they go at it from a different angle.
I remember seeing duct tape on a doorbell with a handwritten sign that said, no candy here. That's... Meanwhile, I have another story completely unrelated but really important for anybody that's planning to travel by air.
Oh, you got my attention.
We all know that there have been many issues with flight delays and cancellations in particular since COVID. And airlines in the United States are now required to give passengers cash refunds if their flight is significantly delayed or canceled, even if that person does not explicitly ask for a refund.
I wonder how they're defining significant in this context.
Well, that's the million-dollar question. The Department of Transportation says the final federal rule requiring that airlines dole out refunds, not vouchers, went into effect Monday. The major change is being implemented only a month before the start of what is likely to be a huge, maybe record-setting, air travel holiday season. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg made the announcement after he first presented his proposal back in April. Quote, today, our automatic refund rule goes into full effect. Passengers deserve to get their money back when an airline owes them without headaches or haggling. The new rule mandates that refunds are automatically processed by an airline if a passenger's flight is canceled or significantly changed and they do not accept the significantly changed flight, rebooking on an alternate flight or alternate compensation.
Oh, okay. There. That's interesting. Your typical plane, set, let's say 175 passengers, and let's just take an average round-trip airfare of $400. If the airline has to pay everybody, that's 70 grand on just one plane. And if you've got multiple problems, like remember that Southwest meltdown?
Yeah.
Look out.
A few holidays ago. So that's just a heads up. Now the gray area is significantly delayed.
Right. I mean, is it so many hours? Or
we'll
what?
See.
Yeah.
They need to clarify that. But keep that in mind. That's a major, major change to your favor. Show Larry Richard with our anchorman Paul Rasmussen. Happy Halloween. A lot of kids are excited about it. A lot of adults, too. A lot of companies partake in parties and costume contests. And meanwhile, it may surprise you to learn that Halloween is a big issue when it comes to drinking and driving. It's a concern. It's right up there with New Year's Eve, believe it or not. And joining us is Sean Kelly, spokesperson with the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board. Sean, good morning. Welcome back to KDKA.
Morning, Larry. Thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Yeah, I know that law enforcement, a lot of people, first and foremost, because a lot of kids, obviously, are going to be out and about this evening, and a lot of that starts at 5 o'clock, but concerns about driving while intoxicated, right?
Yeah, that is definitely a concern. And as we get started, I'd like to take a minute. And this is my first time on Pittsburgh media since the murder of the liquor control enforcement officer a couple of weeks ago. And we want to pass our condolences off to his family and friends. It's important to note that the liquor control enforcement part of the Pennsylvania State Police, they're an important partner in making sure that licensees don't overserve. And as we get into this time of year, that is part of what we really want to talk about this morning. You know, the weather has changed. People are inside more. They're gathering together more for, you know, your holidays like Halloween. You have Thanksgiving coming up, Christmas, New Year's, obviously. And as people get together and they start drinking, sometimes there's this tendency to overserve or overconsume. And that leads to some issues out on the roads. And that leads to some issues out in public as well. So the Bureau of Liquor Control Enforcement and the Pennsylvania State Police, along with the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board, we all kind of work together to make sure that there's responsible alcohol service out in the public.
And what kinds of things do you do to ensure that? I know getting the word out, like right now, just as a reminder to people, especially again because so many kids are going to be walking around the streets.
Well, speaking for the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board, we do promote responsible consumption. Because people will be gathered together, we get a lot of questions from customers in our fine wine and good spirit stores about how do I know how much alcohol to have to a party. So we have tips on how to buy the right amount of alcohol. There's a party planning guide that we offer in our stores to help people figure out what the right number is so people don't have so much alcohol there. Our No When, No How campaign targets parents of younger kids so parents can have a conversation about responsible alcohol consumption and adult use to their kids. Because as kids hang around at home, they see their parents drinking, they see their parents' friends coming over, there's a party at the house, and a lot of times there's a question about, you know, what is alcohol? Why can't I drink this? Why are adults only supposed to drink this? So we promote responsible consumption, adult use consumption in a responsible manner in a variety of ways.
Sean, Paul Rasmussen here. I'm curious to know if the Liquor Control Board also reaches out to businesses that serve alcohol.
We handle the licensing side of things. The enforcement side of things is done by our partners at the Pennsylvania State Police Bureau of Liquor Control Enforcement. We do work to provide a lot of signage. We provide responsible alcohol management program training for servers and sellers, for owners and managers. So when it comes to the enforcement side of things, that's the state police. So they'll be the ones looking for over service or underage service, after hours service. We kind of are more proactive in reaching out to the people who run license establishments and just make sure that they understand what their responsibilities are as liquor licensees.
And we also, Sean, want to express our sympathies for the family of Benjamin Brawler. What a tragedy that is, and to everybody who serves, and we appreciate you being on with us today and just want people to be safe and have a good time tonight. So thank you.
Sure. And it's important to note that as we do get into the cooler weather and people gather indoors, we really want to promote responsible alcohol consumption, especially in the presence of kids. You know, kids are going to be on the streets tonight, especially with warmer weather. We want to make sure that the adults who are supposed to be responsible are acting as responsibly as possible and really take the opportunity to use this and talk to your kids about alcohol and what it is and why they shouldn't be drinking until they reach the legal age of consumption.
Sean Kelly, Press Secretary of the Pennsylvania Liquor Control Board. Thanks again, Sean. Appreciate it.
Thank you both.
All right. And, Paul, there's a history that Pennsylvania's liquor laws that goes back before Prohibition. There was a governor, Clifford Pinchot, from 1923 to 38, had a dry stance on alcohol, and even as Prohibition was repealed, we maintained very strict laws, and up until fairly recently, they were considered some of the strictest in the nation.
I'll never forget moving to Pennsylvania from Montana. Where I was living there, beer was widely available. I mean,
right.
Grocery stores and other places. And ultimately, when I moved here, I was shocked that I had to buy a case of beer at a distributor.
Right.
And I thought, I'm completely unfamiliar with the idea.
Well, it was, you weren't ever allowed to buy alcohol on Sundays for a long stretch.
Right,
so
yeah.
Only recently. But just a heads up tonight for people headed out the door, you know, you just keep the kids in mind. Builders Guild of Western Pennsylvania is presenting a Build On Career event. We're going to tell you all about it with Jeff Nobers, who is the executive director. In studio, very popular here. Jeff, you brought donuts on Halloween, and some of them are themed. Look at them. They come in like locusts once
That's
they see.
That's what I was going to say.
Yeah,
It's like local.
We have
biblical,
heard some
almost.
Very good news for our region about jobs
you
just
in.
Recently
we'll
talking
talk
about.
We have post
increases
Malone
in
here.
Opportunities
Joe
in
Berger
one
from
of those
our country station.
Is in the
we
trades. Five and joining us in studio is Jeff Nobers, Executive Director of the Builders Guild of Western Pennsylvania.
Jeff
and I have known each other a long time.
Is a different
and I appreciate the fact that you guys really do give opportunities.
I've got a fair ticket for you to see the red one. This is supposed to be the big blockbuster for the holiday season.
It's a great alternative.
Starring The Rock.
You know, it's about Santa.
Rather
a kidnapping.
Do something physical
and
not end
up
with
comedy.
A giant bill.
And it opens officially on the 15th of November.
So, welcome, Jeff.
But you can see it
Larry,
first at AMC
here.
Waterfront Theater on
so
the
you 12th have this two
annual two-day event.
Number 7 at 412-922-1020.
Part one is tomorrow, as I understand it. You're working 412-922-1020.
Last year, you had almost 3,000 students attend.
Yeah, we have about the same number registered for this year from 80 plus school districts coming in. So it's, you know, it's very much grown, not just in popularity, but geographically. You know, we have school districts coming that have never come before and from further away because our trade unions here in southwestern PA cover, for the most part, the western half of the state. So, you know, we recruit people in Erie, Pennsylvania, as well as we recruit people here in the Pittsburgh area. So I think it's really getting through to people that these are highly viable career choices for young people to make, or, you know, people that are in the workforce and aren't feeling fulfilled with whatever they're doing. So, you know, the average age of an apprentice is about 26, not 18.
Is it really?
Yeah. So
that may surprise a lot of people.
Yeah, it's you know, it's people that, you know, some have college degrees, you know, some started college and did not finish it for some of the reasons you mentioned. And, you know, then they were looking for that career where they could earn, you know, a very solid middle class living, be able to take care of their family, you know, go on vacations, buy a new car, all the things that we all want to do. And, you know, they have found that opportunity and ability to do that in the construction trades.
And this is at the David Lawrence Convention Center, so easy to get to regionally. Everybody knows where that is. And then Saturday's more of an open opportunity for the public and get a chance to be familiar with the kinds of jobs we're talking about.
Yeah, we certainly encourage, you know, as I mentioned, folks that are they're already in the workforce, but maybe they're feeling unfulfilled or you know, they've hit the ceiling where they're working. It's an opportunity to speak with all 16 of our trades. There are 16 different training centers, 33 different curriculums, if you will, for the skilled trades. So there's a lot of variety. There's a lot of different things people can do. So I certainly encourage people to investigate it. You know, construction's not going to be for everybody. Just like any career path is not for everybody, but if you don't investigate it, then you're not sure if it is or it isn't.
And it's hosted by your organization, the Builders Guild of Western Pennsylvania, in cooperation with the CNX Foundation and Partner for Work. I just met their CEO, Rob, and their team last Friday. Great people. I mean, their whole mission is to help people connect to jobs and you know, life-sustaining jobs.
Yeah, Rob is, you know, I've worked with Rob since he's been here. You know, he's an excellent leader. They do excellent work, really, in developing programs, certainly not just for the construction industry, for industries across the board. And when a new type of industry is coming into the city. You know, AI is going to be a big thing, obviously, here,
right,
as it is everywhere. You know, they'll be on the forefront of working with companies to establish just what is the training, what is the skill set people are going to need to work in that industry.
So you're talking about career opportunities, not only in union construction, you mentioned AI, energy, manufacturing, utility industries. And I want to get into some of those and give us some examples. By the way, these events are free of charge. The Builders Guild of Western Pennsylvania. And we're with Jeff Nobers, the executive director. More coming up on the details of what some of these jobs can mean and what they are next. Continue our conversation with Jeff Nobers, executive director of the Builders Guild of Western Pennsylvania. Their Build On Career event is tomorrow and Saturday at the David Lawrence Convention Center. So who are the Builders Guild of Western Pennsylvania people, Jeff?
Well, the Builders Guild is a labor management organization. It consists of the construction trade unions in southwestern Pennsylvania, as well as contractor associations. So it represents the entire industry, both from the labor side, the skilled trade side, as well as the employer side, which are the contractors. And, you know, that's one thing to know, too. You know, we talk about the trades a lot. And the need for apprentices. You know, there's also needs within the contractor community, too, whether it's a general contractor or a subcontractor. I don't know that people always realize that, you know, a large construction company, they employ accountants, they employ HR people, they employ marketing people. So, you know, it's not just opportunities on the skilled trade side. You know, there are opportunities throughout the industry, but obviously, you know, the more critical or perhaps the most critical factor right now are getting more people into the skilled trades because we have a lot of retirements going on. So, you know, you're losing people at the back end and we're losing more than we're gaining right now. And some of that has to do with population and so forth as well.
One of the things you talk about is a lot of young people choose to go to college, which if you want to go to college and want to pursue whatever, but a lot of people do that without really knowing what they want to do and end up with these big student loan debts at the end of that process. This offers an opportunity where you don't have that issue.
Right. I mean, you can enter an apprenticeship, and if you find out a year and a half in that this is not really what you want to do, you know, you can withdraw from the apprenticeship. You know, maybe you've spent a little bit of money on some tools and work boots, but you're not going to be tens of thousands of dollars in debt. You know, you can, you know, leave that apprenticeship and be in good financial shape.
In one of the crafts, give us an example of what that process is like with an apprenticeship.
Well, I think across the board, they're all very similar, but, you know, if you want to take, you know, for example, the steam fitters, you know, they recruit, you go in, you test. There is a test you take. It's a combination of math and, you know, just reading and ensuring that you're capable and have the skill set at that base level to be able to not do it that day, but to absorb the information you're going to have to absorb. If you score appropriately on the test, there's an interview, and that interview is with both members of the union and contractors, because they are paying for your education. So, you know, they want to sign off on who's coming in. Once you go through that interview, if all agree, you're then offered a spot in that apprenticeship. And then the apprenticeships run anywhere from 3 to 5 years. It depends on the trade and the discipline you go into. But the key thing is you're paid through that entire time. As you had mentioned, Larry, there's no debt that you're incurring, some minimal expenses. You know, we're talking hundreds of dollars, not tens of thousands of dollars. And you're working pretty much the whole time. So, I mean, if you took a 4-year apprenticeship, say in the carpenters, and you go through that 4 years and the next person went to college for 4 years, you know, when they're both done in 4 years, it could be easily a $500,000 difference financially for those two people. You know, the apprentice has earned an income for those 4 years. They've earned pension and annuity credits. They've earned health care through that whole time and very good health care, whereas the college student has not been getting paid, certainly by the college. They're paying the college. And they're not earning retirement benefits or healthcare benefits. And I would say, too, when you look at a college degree, and this is certainly not anti-college. I mean, I went to college. I mean, many of the people in the industry went to college. But when you come out, you don't have a sellable skill per se. You've maybe done one internship or maybe two if you're lucky. Whereas you come out of an apprenticeship, you've spent 8,000 to 10,000 hours learning that craft on the job, hands on, with you know, senior journey persons who help teach you. So it's a far different type of educational process.
Are you finding the jobs are there now? It seems like we've turned a corner here. We've had these major construction jobs like the cracker plant with Shell in Beaver County and other big jobs, the airport. Are we sustaining those kinds of jobs for the future?
Well, there's, you know, I would say today there's not necessarily that $2 billion project sitting there right now.
Well, that was the largest in the country
right,
at the time.
Right, at the time, the cracker plant. But, you know, we have Presby Hospital going right now, which is a $1 billion-plus project. The airport is as well. And, you know, I think we had mentioned, touched on AI before. You know, AI is just, it's at the point where it's just going to explode. And not that I'm certainly not an expert in it, but, you know, they call them AI factories, these data centers. And, you know, the building in and of itself is nothing special. It's a big warehouse and, you know, you're rolling racks of computers. And of course you have to have all the appropriate environmental issues in there with heating and cooling and water. The real side to that is the energy needs of these AI factories.
I heard that they have, in fact, Mainspring has brought this generator that's able to utilize different fuel, including hydrogen and our natural gas, because you need a lot of power. I think they're starting up Three Mile Island.
They are.
Because Philadelphia and that region is going to need.
Well, Three Mile Island is solely to power data centers. It's, I believe it's Microsoft that, you know, went into the deal with Constellation Energy. So, I mean, you're restarting a nuclear power plant just to power these data centers.
Well, that gives you some idea. So this is two-day event, again, tomorrow for students, teachers, administrators, counselors from 80 different regional schools, and then Saturday open to the public 9 to 12:30 at the David Lawrence Convention Center. It's free. It's an opportunity maybe to get a life-changing career. And Jeff, appreciate you coming in. This is good stuff.
Well, we appreciate you taking the time to have us in, Larry. It's we think it's important, and it's an opportunity people really need to explore.
The Builders Guild of Western Pennsylvania, Jeff Dobers is the executive director. How do they get a hold of you or to get more information about this and other regional opportunities?
They can go to the website buildingtradespgh.com. All the info's there.
buildingtradespgh.com. Jeff, thank you, and most importantly, thank you for the donuts.
You're very well. I noticed that somebody's already had three. You know, it was a two limit.
Whose name will remain nameless at this point. Appreciate it, Jeff. Happy Halloween. That's a great costume you have.
Yeah, thanks. Yours too.
And I can see the good doctor via our video at kdkradio.com. You can see him on the radio, too. The good doctor, Mike Hutchinson, Animal General, LaSalle Plaza in Cranberry. And I see behind you, Doc, you have your fireplace set up for Halloween.
Yeah, and the engaged sign. Our youngest son got engaged last week.
Oh, it says engaged. I thought it was some horror thing. Well, congratulations in that case.
And another grandchild yesterday.
Yesterday?
Yeah, little girl.
What's going up on the mountains there in the woods?
Yeah.
Well, congratulations. What's the name?
Thank you. Hazel.
Hazel.
Hazel. I already forgot the middle name. I have to study that one.
You better get on that right away, Doc.
And I'm going to meet her today, I hope.
All right. Well, it's a big day for the Hutchinsons. Yeah. All right, Doc, we have a question from Alyssa in Mount Lebanon. How can I remove plaque from my dog's teeth without causing him problems? Is there a tool for scraping them? I think he would let me. I don't want to have him anesthetized for that unless there are no other options. So what do you got?
Yeah, you know, I certainly understand that. And there are tools for scraping, but I don't recommend it because unless you're experienced at that, you end up scraping the enamel too much. And that is not good. That'll cause future problems. So I recommend that you use a dental toothbrush, an extra soft toothbrush, in something like canine enzymatic toothpaste that's it contains two enzymes that help to kill the bacteria that causes the plaque and tartar. And then that manual, even a finger brush, that manual action can help remove that tartar. And just work on it. It will work if you do it over time. They also have things that they put in those enzymatic toothpaste, like chlorhexidine, which helps with the bacteria as well. So I recommend that, and maybe some dental chews like Greenies or what's that other one? Oravets is a good one. But I don't recommend manually scraping them unless you're expert at it, because you're going to end up doing more harm than good.
Dr. Mike, Isabel in Greenberg says her cat is losing its balance occasionally. Wants to know what the reason could be behind that. She's about 7 years old.
You know, it could be a number of reasons for that. One of the common ones, if it's occasional, is that they can grow polyps inside their ear canal. So I always check their inner ear to look to see if they have any problems like that. And that can cause, it can put them off, and you can only imagine what that would feel like. But there's other things. I mean, of course, infections, head trauma, spinal injuries, things that I might not know about. And if it's going on toxin exposures, if they're getting into plants they shouldn't get into, or some things in the garage, antifreeze, things like that, that's deadly. But you want to look for different problems like that. Even metabolic disorders can cause them to lose balance. So I would see your veterinarian over that one, and they could do a workup and try to rule out those problems. The one in the ear is a real common one. And a young cat.
Justin in Shadyside wants to know, Dr. Mike, what kind of diet is best for a dog with sensitive digestion? I've tried several supermarket diets, not working a lot, still vomits. What do you think?
Yeah, you know, they make special diets that you can try that are prescription diets, or we call them gastrointestinal diets. They're like 40% digested. They're highly digestible diets, so it makes it real easy on their stomach. And they're real healthy, too. They have all the nutrients that they require. Sometimes that doesn't work. They need a limited ingredient diet. Your dog might be sensitive to some of the proteins that I don't know about. And these limited ingredient diets are like one protein and one carbohydrate, but they're balanced. And if that continues, your vet's going to look for causes of that vomiting. Sometimes their body, their immune system will cause inflammation in the stomach and intestinal lining. We call it inflammatory bowel disease. And those dogs will vomit regardless of the diet that you pick, and we have to do some other things. Sometimes you require medication, but we can test for food sensitivities too with their saliva and see what foodstuffs they might be sensitive to, and that could help. Homemade diets only if necessary. They have to be balanced if you do it. I like homemade diets, but they certainly have to be balanced.
Well, I know, speaking of diets, once in a while you have pumpkin pulp as a remedy for some things. And while we're talking about Halloween, this is a good time to remind people the dangers of the artificial sweeteners and chocolates, in particular for dogs around trick-or-treat.
Yeah, and artificial sweeteners and candies, too. The you know, dogs like to get into everything. They smell it, and then they want to taste it. And xylitol is what we're talking about, is artificial sweetener. People know that chocolate's toxic. I do love canned pumpkin for dogs as a fiber source. But we don't want them to get into moldy pumpkin, you know, so we have to be careful with the pumpkins that are out there, because they will get moldy, especially with the heat that we've been having. And then, of course, everybody knows, watch out for fires. I like the little LED lights and pumpkins now, as opposed to the candles, because that could cause a problem. Dogs don't understand sometimes, and they could tip them over, cats too. And then, of course, the stress of all the people coming to your door. You want to put them in a safe room, because dogs escape during this time when you don't expect it. They get kind of anxious. Most dogs get anxious when that doorbell keeps going off. So, you know, be aware of that. And then, of course, if you have decorations around, cobwebs, things like that, be careful with those too, because dogs are curious. Glow sticks, they like to chew them. Those glow sticks are not highly toxic, but they will make them drool, and some dogs will start vomiting. So you want to keep glow sticks away from them, too.
All right, Doc. Congratulations again. A new granddaughter and an engagement. Boy, what a week you're having.
Yes, great time. Thank you. Seeing you guys.
You too. The great Dr. Mike Hutchinson of Animal General, LaSalle Plaza in Cranberry. You can go to kdkradio.com, and we have a link to animalgeneral.net. Fast. Don't get nervous, Ellen. I'll get back to you.
Funny how those things work out, right?
Yeah, I meant what I meant to play was this.
It makes sense to start out with Start Me Up.
Start Me Up! They're still on tour. Hard to believe. The Rolling Stones. I see these videos of Mick Jagger, now in his early 80s, prancing around the stage. And, you know, who just turned 80? Keith Richards, right? And then when Richard Simmons passed, someone posted, I'm going to rethink this whole thing about
right.
health and exercise. Because these guys are still out there doing their thing. It's pretty remarkable. Coming up, I'm looking forward to our conversation with Bill Hillgrove. Pitt is 7-0, headed to Dallas, Texas. The newcomer to the ACC, one of, is SMU, Southern Methodist University.
And they're a ranked team, right?
They're 7-1, and they're ranked 20th. Pitt's ranked 18th, so statistical virtual tie. This will be a great challenge. But yesterday, the Pat Narduzzi Show, weekly at 6, at the Indigo Hotel, by the way, which is down there on Technology Drive, right near the Hot Metal Bridge at the base of Bate Street, found out that the redshirt freshman from Alabama, quarterback Eli Holstein, is cleared to play.
Good.
Which is huge.
Absolutely huge.
So it was a week ago, Thursday, 2 weeks ago, I guess, already, which is hard to believe. They played Syracuse at Acrisure and ended up with this unbelievable first half on defense. 3 interceptions, run back for touchdowns. The defense scored 21 points in the first half.
Yes, they excelled in every way. I said to a friend, it's going to come down to the defense. In a couple of days before the game, I didn't realize how right that was going to be.
Well, up until that point, Syracuse quarterback was the second statistically in passing in the country.
Yeah.
And they made Mr. Kyle McCord look very pedestrian.
Oh, that's putting it mildly.
5 total picks for the defense.
Speaking, just to be nice to everybody, speaking of really good defense, the Nittany Lions have a very good defense, and they are playing a big game coming up this weekend.
Ohio State.
Look out.
At Beaver Stadium. They'll be packed to the rafters, and as they always are. I think they're doing a whiteout, and they're also undefeated. Ohio State comes in with one blemish. They lost a squeaker out in Oregon, but they're battling it out for the Big Ten. That's a huge game, too.
Yep, it certainly is.
That's a noon kickoff, I believe.
Yes, I saw that, and I was a little surprised that they didn't move it back.
Pitt's kickoff is 8 o'clock here in Eastern time. So you got Penn State, Ohio State, then you got Pitt, SMU. So if you're a local sports fan, Saturday will be bookended by some great games.
Number 18 versus number 20. SMU's doing well.
Oh, yeah. It'll be a challenge.
So you're heading for Dallas then.
I am. We're going to talk to Bill Hillgrove coming up right after the news at the top of the hour.
11. Back is McCord. Throws that pass. Intercepted with the football running down the field left side. Kyle Lewis still on his feet at the 25-20, 15-10. He's into the end zone for the second pick six of the day.
This is unbelievable.
Wow. This defense, these Sharks are eating.
University of Pittsburgh Panthers, 7-0, heading into the weekend where they'll meet a 7-1 SMU team in Dallas, Texas. And joining us every Thursday at this time is the legendary voice of the Panthers in his 51st season football, about to start 56 in basketball, Bill Hillgrove. Bill, good morning.
Good morning, Larry. How's it going for you today?
Good. I know you have seen just about everything, but when you say, well, I haven't seen that before, 3 picks in one half by the Panthers, 21 points to the D, in 30 minutes was really impressive with five total interceptions.
I thought that defense looked like an NFL defense, speed-wise. And we had talked about it earlier. The increased speed that they have at linebacker is pretty obvious. And I think, you know, that's why they deserve that name, the Sharks, because they smell blood in the water and look out. Now, this week, it's going to be a different sort of a challenge because I believe Kyle Jennings will play. He got hurt toward the end of the Duke game, came back, wasn't cleared until, what, yesterday to go full tilt. But I think he'll play. And, you know, he's an athletic quarterback, and he's very accurate. Breshard Smith, their running back, 6.4 yards a carry. That pretty much puts him in, you know, the upper echelon of ACC, if not running backs in the country. So, you know, their work will be cut out. And I was kind of shocked that the opening line from Las Vegas, Nevada, was 7.5. But I guess those people are objective, and they see it that way.
Las Vegas, Nevada. I love that. By the way, Pat Narduzzi, Pitt's head coach, on his radio show last night, broke the news that Eli Holstein was cleared to play, which is great news for Panthers fans. So it sets up for another quarterback duel and trying to keep the momentum. The Mustangs are ranked 20th, Pitt 18th. They're 7-1. Their only loss coming to the undefeated BYU team. And then last week against Duke, they had to go to overtime, and really Duke missed a couple of field goals. They could have easily won that game. So I'm sure the Mustangs will want to prove, hey, we're worthy, as these two top 20 teams will battle it out Saturday night at 8 on the ACC network. And Bill, the defense is going to be critical in this, as they have been the last two games for the Panthers.
I think so. And also, you know, SMU can be disruptive in the kicking game, as Duke found out. Duke lined up with a 30-yarder last play of regulation, and the kid Harvey jumped over a blocker. I guess they call him the Bandit. That's the name that they give those edge rushers. But he jumped over the guy and blocked the field goal, and they went into overtime, and the rest is history. So they're good. The Panthers are going to have to be ready in all three phases. And I like Holstein to bounce back from his, you know, two previous so-so performances.
Bill, I find it rather ironic that a team that had to be, that got the death penalty back in 1987 for payments to the players, all these years later, here we are, and SMU is back and is just as big as they used to be.
Yeah, and you know, the defense particularly, all but two starters, both safeties, all are transfers, many from programs like Miami. And so, you know, they're getting it done. They're bringing players in of high quality. And, yeah, they're back. And you tip your hat and say, okay. But, you know, I think what the Panthers are going to have to deal with this schedule getting tougher as we get down the stretch, if you're going to be great, you have to beat great teams, and that's what it comes down to.
And while we have Bill Hillgrove, let's talk about the Steelers. They have a bye week. They go into the bye with a 6-2 record. Not a lot of people thought that was going to be the case. Just your thoughts on Russell Wilson and what you saw on Monday night against the Giants.
Yeah, there's a reason he has the C on his jersey. You know, he's been there, he's done it, he's seen it, and I think he sees the field as well as anybody. And like 2 weeks in a row now, we have a quarterback rating of triple digits. We haven't seen that since Ben. And so, you know, I think that augurs well for the offense. The defense can really be dominant at times. I'd like to see them shore it up maybe a little bit better against the run. But I think the bye week is coming at a tremendous time, and I look forward to them, you know, even though, you know, the bulk of their division games are lumped together, I look forward to them going through that and maintaining their winning style.
Bill, what are your thoughts about getting another receiver? There's been a lot of talk about that in the last few weeks.
I was at the opener, and when I saw Calvin Austin do what he did then, and then he had the great game last week, I think he's fine as the number two receiver. And let's face it, when you get a talent like George Pickens and you get a quarterback that can get him the ball he's like 1.5 receivers. So, I, you know, all that talk about the Steelers having to go after that number two receiver, and some of the names that came up aren't the kind of high character players that you want in your locker room. So I think they're fine.
All right, it's Pitt SMU Saturday night, 8 ACC Network, on the air on The Fan with the network show at 6 with Bill Hillgrove, Pat Bostick, Doran Dickerson, Cale Berger, and myself. Looking forward to a trip to Dallas. I haven't been there since the Super Bowl with the Packers, and remember that horrible weather that week, Bill?
Oh, gosh. And, I, you know, those people don't know what salt is. They use sand.
Right.
And I'd sat in my hotel lobby looking out the big bay window, and I saw a car do like a 360 and a half. Those people just didn't know how to handle that kind of weather. But, yeah, that was a nightmare that week. It really was.
We gave Jim Colony a ride to the show at the convention center one morning, and he hasn't been the same since. I'll just leave it at that. All right, Bill, we'll look forward to it. We'll see you on the charter tomorrow. Thanks, partner.
H2P.
The great Bill Hillgrove.
Yeah, okay. Guys, bring us back a win from Dallas.
Oh, that'd be fun. Boy, would that be fun. From the P.J. Fitzpatrick Home Improvement Traffic Center, AAA Traffic, powered by Bowser Genesis of Monroeville. Ellen Gamble, what's going on?
Well, not so much fun out on the area roads, but lots of brake lights, guys. If you're headed outbound on the Parkway West, here's the good news. They made very quick work of an earlier accident down by the Carnegie Interchange. The not so great news is the delays remain behind it. So traffic is getting on the move again, once again there. But you do have heavy traffic on the front side of Green Tree Hill, up over the top of the hill, and then down toward Carnegie. The inbound ride greets you with the brake lights at the top of Green Tree Hill ahead of those Fort Pitt tunnels. Trying to make your way from the eastern suburbs toward downtown via the Squirrel Hill tunnels, you're lining up at Wilkinsburg. The ride on 28 has gotten a bit better for you, just slow before Millvale, down past the 40th and 31st Street bridges. Our next AAA traffic on the fives at 8:25. I'm Ellen Gamble on 100.1 FM and AM 1020 KDKA.
Sunshine greets you again. We're kind of getting used to that. A record 81 today on Halloween, and then becoming mostly cloudy. There's a little hidden vigorish in the forecast. There might be a couple of showers, and hoping if they come, they'll be late. We actually need a little rain, but we're not going to get that over the weekend. Temperatures are going to dip, a high of just near 60 tomorrow, 58 Saturday, back to the mid-60s Sunday, and then Monday we're back to the mid-70s. What's going on? Right now we're in the mid-60s at Pittsburgh International. This is the Big K Morning Show, and every Thursday we check in with Pittsburgh Magazine's food editor, Christy Graver, and today I see via video, and you can too, Christy on the radio at kdkradio.com. Check out our live stream. And Christy is dressed like bacon.
You are what you eat.
I've never seen that costume, but it's very flattering in some
Thank
ways.
You.
Yeah, I mean, who doesn't love bacon, right? That is, so are you going to a party tonight, or is this just...
I'm taking my daughter trick-or-treating, but as something else food-related, but I've worn this a number of years, but...
How old is your daughter, if I may ask?
Well, she's 15.
So
but,
she's right on the edge of, you know, it's cool, not cool to trick-or-treat?
It's cool to me, so, you know, I mostly want to go.
So she's, yes, she's giving
she's
you a break.
She's tagging along.
Yeah. I got you. All right, let's talk about Pittsburgh Magazine, some great stories. And speaking of dressed up, these bridesmaids understood the assignment, dressed like pierogies.
Yeah, a couple of weeks ago, I talked about a groom who wore a wedding jacket made out of Heinz ketchup packets. Well, at a recent reception at the Hotel Monaco, the bridesmaids dress as pierogies, and they race through the ballroom, probably to the cookie table. And it's a scene that went viral on TikTok, so you could check it out on our website. It's really fun, and just so Pittsburgh. I need one of those costumes.
Yeah, well, Pittsburgh is known for their cookie tables. I don't think some people, we take it for granted if you're a native, but not everywhere around the country is the cookie table so common.
And they need to embrace it because it's great. I just judged a competition with cookies, and I ate a lot. So I love cookies.
All right, here's a great way to support Make-A-Wish.
So Prince Wise, a 9-year-old heart transplant recipient, he dreamed of creating a signature dish alongside a professional. And that was an order that Make-A-Wish was happy to place. So earlier this month, the budding chef visited Floor 2. That's the restaurant inside the downtown Fairmont Hotel. And he spent 4 hours in the kitchen with Chef Fernando Canales to perfect Prince's crab cake sandwich and fries. The meal is available on Floor 2's lunch, brunch, and dinner menus. And it's available through December 21st, with 10% of all sales going to Make-A-Wish, Greater Pennsylvania, and West Virginia. It's delicious. I used to live in Maryland, so I know crab cakes, and this one's really good. So go and support. And it's just like a beautiful restaurant. So Prince is awesome.
So what do you ask for? Prince's crab cake sandwich and fries.
Yes, there's no way you can miss it. Like there's like a little advertisement on every table. You'll see. It's adorable, and he's adorable.
All right, this week in Pittsburgh history, Christy, we're talking today about a record high for Halloween of 81, but that hasn't always been the case.
Though on October 31st, 1993, snow covered the ground for Halloween, which fell on a Sunday. I was a freshman in high school, like my daughter is now, but I went out for candy in McCandless with my dad and my little brother, and I was so bundled up that you could not tell that I was a teenage werewolf. But this Halloween, it's going to be, like you said, like 82 degrees and cloudy. I mean, I'll take it.
We had 6 inches of snow that day. I remember it really well. It was not very Halloween-like.
And 35 degrees.
Oh, yeah. And overall, yeah, I would say it was actually kind of miserable. So I'll take the...
I'm a diehard.
I'll take the 81.
Yeah, totally. Have fun. Happy Halloween, everyone. And I can't wait to go out and see everyone's costumes.
Read all about it, Pittsburgh Magazine. Christy Graver, you look great as bacon. Have fun tonight.
I will. You too. Bye-bye.
All right, and we'll check in with Christy next Thursday. Meanwhile, speaking of Halloween, America will spend $12 billion scaring ourselves silly. And New York's got this place called Blood Manor. It's one of the scariest fright fests around. However, a so-called extreme haunted house in Tennessee is causing a big controversy. It's called McCamey Manor. Some people have been through McCamey Manor, have been beaten, abused, and humiliated. There's a $20,000 prize for anyone who endures the entire 8-hour deal, but no one has ever won it. Jim Lorenzo owns Blood Manor and says these extreme houses give traditional haunts a bad name.
We want to make sure that we scare the heck out of people, but we make sure that they're safe. What crosses the line is that you have to consider safety first. You know, you could scare people without touching them, without putting bugs on them. We don't need to torture you to frighten you.
Yeah, I'm with you. I read about that place in Tennessee. It's 8:25 at KDK. In our city, two arrests have been made of two individuals who are charged with conspiracy and defacing or damaging religious property, according to a criminal complaint. And the names are Mohammed Hamid, a 23-year-old of Coriopolis, and Talia A. Lubit, 24, of Pittsburgh. And they're being accused of defacing in Squirrel Hill near the Shabbat, signs spray-painted. And according to U.S. Attorney Eric Olshan says that defacing religious property is not protected speech. It is a crime. To get reaction, we wanted to reach out to Rabbi Yisrael Altin. Rabbi, appreciate your time this morning.
Thank you very much, A, for having me on.
The state of anti-Semitism in these protests, and in this case, criminal defacing of religious property. At least in this case, they've got some suspects. Your reaction to this?
So first of all, I want to express my gratitude and thanks to the law enforcement for carrying through on, you know, taking it seriously and really carrying this all through all the way to the end until they found the suspects and arrested them. And we hope it continues all the way through, you know, and people are held responsible for their actions. That's, I think, what we have our feelings for this morning. In general, you know, it's really sad that people feel that they have to express their opinions in violent ways, especially when their opinions are associating themselves with violent people. You know, as I said, thank God we have good law enforcement here that are, you know, going to keep hopefully help us keep safe.
Rabbi Paul Rasmussen here. I'm curious to know if you're seeing any improvement in anti-Semitic behaviors in the last few months.
You know, it's hard to tell because, you know, to be honest, it's not like every single day every individual gets hit with anti-Semitism. It's an ongoing, you know, all over. Unfortunately, as we all know, it's been a rise on it. Our reaction and, you know, in general and in our organization particularly is we focus on what we need to do, which is creating positive experiences for people. Practice our religion, our Judaism proudly, openly, and warmly. And that's where our focus is. So, of course, you know, we're cognizant of what's going on around us and making sure everyone's being safe. So that's really where our focus is on. And, you know, we leave it to law enforcement to keep their eyes on the those doing violent acts of anti-Semitism. But, you know, that being said, clearly we have a problem here. And, you know, I don't know to say that it's getting better or worse, but we definitely have something here that has to be dealt with.
And Rabbi, as you're acutely aware, we just came across the sixth year since Tree of Life. A lot of people reached out from around the country and the world. I'm sure you heard from a lot of people who are empathetic and in face of that tragedy.
Yes, absolutely. I mean, the fact that our city was the site of the worst anti-Semitic attack in the country. Does give you know, keeps people on edge. And so when things like this happen, you know, even if it's just defacing a building and it's not a, and thank God not a person being harmed, but it does get people on edge. But then again, you know, as I said, our strength is in our positivity, and that's where we put in our effort to do as much as we can to keep a positive community and environment for people.
And what is it that you have planned for the next coming month or two?
So we are actually, you know, the funny thing about the defacing of our building is we are coming to an end of a large renovation of our synagogue. So, you know, on the outside they try to get a little dirt in there, but on the inside we have a beautiful building that we're finishing now, and we're looking to celebrate that and utilize that. So we're actually in a very you know, exciting phase in our organization. And so we're getting ready for Hanukkah and a couple of this year it's at the end of December, and Hanukkah is always a big celebration in our organization. I'm sure you and your listeners are familiar with the menorah parade that's put up by our organization with the cars going around, big celebrations on the streets. So we're gearing up for more celebrations.
Well, Rabbi, appreciate your willingness to speak with us today and get your reaction. Thank you so much.
You're welcome. We should only have good news to share with each other.
We appreciate that. Rabbi Yisrael Altin on News Radio KDKA. Starting to get a little weird around here. Have you noticed, Paul?
Yes, I have.
We have this Halloween costume contest going on in Odyssey, Pittsburgh here, where we have gathered people on and off the air for five radio stations. Mm. And I've seen some weird things over the years here, and today's just one of them.
Anything stand out?
Well, we got Kale Berger from Y108 dressed as, who's the guy? Post Malone.
Post Malone.
Who's got all the tattoos on his face. So he has some, I assume they're just scribbled on with Sharpie.
Right.
Or otherwise. And then we have Andy Lindberg, who's our digital manager. There he is, dressed as the guy from Halloween, Jason, right?
Oh, my. Oh, no.
What? He's actually... He looks like our old boss, Dave Labrosi, with that on. So you're wearing, what is that? Who is that?
Michael Myers.
Oh, that's it.
Yeah, baby.
But he's in Halloween.
Yeah.
I'm just in the right movie genre. When you put that mask on, now you have a jumpsuit on just like Michael Myers did.
He was apparently an auto mechanic.
And you look a little bit like Dave Labrosi, our former big boss, Dave.
Well, I just want to know that I'm proud of you and I will be murdering everyone.
And what is Pat Septak, our news editor?
Charlie Brown.
Oh, I see. I didn't get the bottom. Oh, I see the bottom of your shirt there. I was missing that. So I could tuck in. I have a black shirt on. So if I button the top and put in a little white collar, you could call me Father Lawrence.
As long as you just don't want to hear any confessions, that's all I care about.
I kind of do, actually. I hear that every day when Marty comes in. And Erin is not dressed up. She doesn't realize this is a big deal today for the contest. What's the prize?
I have no idea. I just don't want to. I mean, I paid for this, so I figure I'd get the mileage out of it.
Well, the thing with that mask is you can't tell it's you walking around.
Yeah, it freaks my wife out. She
freaks everybody out.
But the original mask that Michael Myers wore was actually a William Shatner mask from Star Trek that they found and spray painted white.
Oh,
for Halloween.
Look at you with the scary movie facts.
And I had one other thing I wanted to tell you. You were talking to Christy Graver about haunted houses.
Yeah.
What is it? Mobay or Bear, that complex off the Parkway West, that big
it's Convestro now.
Yeah, it's Convestro now, but back then they had a haunted trail. And they would have employees from the company as like scary people. And there was this one woman with a very thick Pittsburgh accent trying to be scary. So you heard in the woods, like, food, I want food. And it kind of killed the aesthetic, but
get out. That's like Jimmy Crenn talking about he met an exorcist, a real one here in Pittsburgh. And the guy was a little older. He said, used to be an exorcist. He goes, yeah, Jimmy, I'm retired now. That's a young man's game. And then Jimmy said, well, what did you do? You go in the house. Get out of the house, you demons. All right. Well, you can see if you go to our video stream. I don't know what Marty's going to be dressed as, or Colin Dunlap, for that matter.
I'd be surprised if either of them costumed today, but we got first time for everything.
Michael Myers with a plastic knife. And
I forgot my real stabbing knife.
That's great. 855 at KDKA. Who are you?